You're listening to Buildopedia, your go-to podcast for everything you need to know about property. By covering the entire journey from buying your home through to design, building, selling, and everything in between, we'll help you fill in the blanks and bring your property vision to life.
Welcome to another episode of Buildopedia. We're so happy to have Matt Hasson. Matt, thanks for joining us again. I guess you're going to become the resident Buildopedia real estate guru. I hope that's okay.
I'm happy to help, mate, as always, Matt, as you know. Yeah.
And Matt, you've just flown in from Byron just to be on our podcast. So I really thank you.
I have indeed. My pleasure. Yep, it was. It's all worth it. So hopefully the information I can pass on is valuable.
Now, Matt, just to introduce the podcast today, Matt and I are just going to talk about property and where things are heading. And because, to be honest, like, I'm someone who has a handle on markets and property, and I have no idea at the moment. I'm lost. So that's why I thought we'd bring Matt on and just give us a bit of guidance, and just because I don't know what is happening out there and clients are asking me, I don't know what to tell them. I refer them to the Reserve Bank, and, you know, so just ask. But just to begin with, Matt, who's inspired you or what's inspired you this week?
Yeah, well, somebody that's pretty interesting. I've listened to the podcast twice. It's on the Lex Friedman podcast. I'm not sure if your listeners are aware of Lex Friedman. He's got a great podcast. And there's a gentleman that he interviewed maybe 2 weeks ago now called Paul Rosalie, who's a gentleman that's been in and out of living in the Amazon jungle for the last 25 years or so. And he's been doing so in order to raise awareness. And he's kind of positioned himself into about 50,000 square meters of land to protect it from logging and from poachers and all sorts of different things. But the stories that he shares from living within the Amazon, from, you know, he walked on top of a 25-foot anaconda at one point. He was raising an anteater and then got some crazy infection from, you know, worms that were living in his arms and all sorts of stuff. He had close run-ins with some of the original primitive people that are still living up there that unfortunately, you know, even killed a couple of his work crew and things like that. So the stories that he shared, and he's an amazing storyteller, but he's done it all to raise awareness to protect the Amazon jungle, which he's done in several books that he's written. And he's really living on the edge, living his dream. He doesn't feel normal in, you know, in a society like we've got here in the city. He just always wants to get back to nature, and quite an amazing story. I only just looked at now just before, and he's been up just on YouTube alone. I think there's 2 million views already. So you can imagine on all the other podcasts and streaming services just how many times this guy's been listened to. So I highly recommend him. Yeah, Paul Rosalie on the Lex Friedman podcast. It is quite an amazing story.
I love a good story, but I can't help thinking, and it's a fantastic tale, and I'm looking forward to listening to it. But hang on, he's protecting the jungle, but the other people are protecting the jungle from his people. So how does that work?
Well, they think, so the story goes that they've been burnt from when Ford went up there to start logging some of the forests for rubber, the rubber trees. And so they move deeper and deeper into the jungle. So any person, you know, that comes in anywhere near them, it's been passed down through the lineage that they're just evil. So even though they're up there more looking at the animals and diversity and checking things out that they're of no danger or threat at all, if anything, they're up there to try and protect all of those things and stop poachers from getting further and what have you. The pygmies up there just think of them as just, they're all evil people coming to get them. So, and apparently they've got, you know, I think it's a 7-foot bow and 6-foot arrows, and they literally just open fire. So if they see any person that comes anywhere near them, yeah, watch out. So they, you know, try to stay well aware of where they are, but that's how they are. And apparently there's quite a big conversation within parts of that South America and what have you, that should they go up into the jungles and actually, you know, do something about them, or do you just leave them alone? So, and his view is just leave them alone. They're living their life. But, you know, there's apparently a big debate on what to do with them.
Yeah, right. So speaking, just segueing into from one wild place to another, yes. What's happening in the Sydney property market? Because, like I said, I think of myself as someone who kind of knows what's happening. I don't know what's happening. I'm totally confused because we've got a housing shortage. We're heading into what may be a recession, maybe not. We've got apparently slowing down of construction, but still can't get any work done in some things. So there's all these contradictions. So that's why I thought we'd reach out. Let us know what you're thinking.
Well, for sure. Yeah, look, so there's a real tug of war unfolding on at the moment, as you rightly say. So between this negative and uncertain economy versus all of a sudden we've got rising rental values, rising property prices as well, which has caught a lot of people off guard, particularly on the sales side of things. So I'll just start with the two key things, which is the rental market, which has got a lot of airtime at the moment, as you would know, about the rental shortage. And, you know, there's even headlines of students arriving in Australia and certainly Sydney that are living in tents. I haven't seen anything like that, but we've seen extraordinary growth in that rental area. So just to give you in a nutshell there, we're coming off a pretty low base. Like, rents dropped significantly through COVID, as you can imagine. There's a lot of people deserted the country and everybody didn't know what was going on, so, and lost jobs or whatever it might be. So, you know, if you're managing a lot of properties, of which we do, north of 4,000, we probably lost around 30% or maybe a bit more in income, in rental income through that period. So that gives you a bit of an insight on what happened then. But what we're seeing now is an incredible exponential growth, certainly over the last probably about 12 months now it's been happening, but it's seemingly gone into overdrive now. So we have a low supply of investment properties. Just last month alone, we've got record immigration. So last month alone in Sydney, 37,000 new people entered New South Wales and Sydney particularly. So you've got this huge influx of, it's the biggest record migration intake that we've ever had in Australia's history. So as a result, we're seeing rents are up about 15%. And that's still going forward, and a vacancy rate probably in our markets, probably closer to around 1%. So things are getting snapped up fairly swiftly. So that's the rental market. And because of that growth, I think this has a bit of a knock-on effect into the sale market as well. So because the market, from a sales perspective now, has been very uncertain about what's happening with property prices, we think there could be a recession. Interest rates have gone up 10 consecutive times as opposed to the first month on pause this month in April. So it was expected that property prices would come off fairly significantly. They've come off, according to CoreLogic data, by about 15%. But all of a sudden, at the end of February and into March, we've just started to see that table turn and property prices are starting to rise again. Now, there are anomalies. So there's different, you know, things in every market. So I don't think I can categorically just go out there and say every property that's coming on the market is now experiencing price growth. That's not to be the case. But certainly homes which are more renovated in blue chip areas with the right location, right aspect and things of that nature, right floor plan, they're doing particularly well. So the discerning buyer is certainly picking the eyes out of the market. Things which are might be a little bit more compromised now with a poor layout or poor aspect or poor street, something like that. They're still being probably a little harshly looked at, and that goes for apartments as well. So we're just starting to see some modest growth, but you would suggest the market overall is stabilizing. There's a realization now that potentially the market, the worst of the downturn is behind us. A lot of economists and market financial pundits are out there suggesting that the bottom of the market is in. And if anything, we might see just very modest, slight growth for the remainder of this year before, you know, potentially maybe better growth next year when interest rates are suggested that they might actually start falling again. So that's what we're seeing, I guess, if that sums everything up, on the rental market and the sale market for the moment.
What we're seeing is a different sort of client, where a couple of years ago, most of our, like, in terms of design clients and design and construction, a lot of our clients were people with families stuck in their home trying to make their house bigger as quickly as they could. Whereas now our clients tend to be people who maybe have a bit more money, who have a bit more, but have sat out and waited patiently. And now they're, you know, it's not unprecedented for people to, you know, we've got one client who's combining two apartments into one bigger home. We've got another client who's just taking out a bedroom and adding a nice big ensuite, nice big walk-in robe. And we're kind of going, well, that may devalue the property having one less bedroom. Normally we try and have the, you know, rule of thumb, the more bedrooms, the better the, you know, the more valuable the property is. So are you seeing that? Is it different people buying?
Yeah. Look, it's a very interesting time. And, you know, I think your point's right there, Matt, that I think a lot of people are just unsure about what to do. Do you upgrade? Do you get the best out of your current asset? And then they go and investigate, obviously doing building costs and renovations and things like that, and they can see that there's time delays and cost increases and things of that nature. So then we're starting to see that particular buy pool swing into the market, but they're very unsure about, well, what are they looking for? They don't even know themselves. So there is that bit of uncertainty. So yeah, in some ways we're seeing a buy pool which is growing, but that said, just so you know, home loan approvals are at a record low. So the thing that's happening, I guess, that's underpinning the strength in the current sale market is supply and demand. There's very, very low supply. I think we're a bit down around 30% on last year, what was available. So that limited supply with even a lower supply of buyers is still suggesting to us that supply and demand is actually in favor of sellers. So because we've got those people, to your point, that are just not sure about what they do. Do they get out in the market? So not everybody that's looking is really ready to make a transaction, but they've certainly got a foot in both camps. Do we sit in our existing home and do something and improve that? Or do we keep our eye open to find something that might actually be financially a little bit better for us and we can make it all work, and they put that puzzle together and they'll make the switch? So yeah, I guess in short, yeah, it's a different type of buyer at the moment. Like, it's not an aggressive market like we saw in the pandemic type area where you were turning up and there'd be 10 contracts out and everybody would bid and they compromised on everything. If it didn't have a car space, they didn't care. If it didn't have a bathroom upstairs, they didn't care. All of that's kind of gone. People that are buying and transacting at the moment, far more detailed, far more specific about what they're looking to secure, because it's got to solve whatever the problem and life issue is that's sitting behind them. So yeah, it is a bit of a different buy pool.
Yeah, and you did mention at one point, we talked a little while ago that there was, even though there's less loan approvals, a lot of people who are buying just are buying cash. Or is that something I misheard, or is that
some? Yeah, definitely. Look, if you've got equity at the moment, and that's most people that were sensible through the pandemic and stimulus period, instead of going out and, you know, like a lot of people did do and bought big, bought cars, you know, did everything they could with whatever their money and really fully loaded up. There's a lot of people that didn't do anything like that. They were sensible, paid down debt, sat everything, you know, so they're now sitting in a fairly good cash position. So we are seeing a lot of those buyers now, because a lot of them were said, well, look, when the market turns, you know, as a lot of people say, we're waiting for the market to turn, then we'll enter the market when we think it's more favorable from a buyer's perspective. So we've seen a lot of those people come in and they've been looking at things which only 18 months, 2 years ago may have sold for $2.5 million, and they're all of a sudden looking at those going, well, now I can buy them for two. So that certainly pulled a lot of those people out into the market at the moment. But yeah, the cash buyers, yeah, there are a few. I mean, we traded one last week, which, you know, a fairly significant home north of $6 million. And that was a cash deal. So, yeah, there are some of those buyers around.
Yeah, and I guess if you predict a downturn long enough, it'll happen one day. And, yeah, one of my mates whose dad's been in real estate, he's been predicting a downturn for 20 years, I think. And I said, you finally nailed it.
Well, that's right. Yeah, everyone gets to be right once, right? We've got a sign in our office. So I don't know if I've mentioned this before in the previous show, but there's a sign, and it's in the real estate reception area, and there's an old man sitting in the corner with his walking stick, you know, and the lady walks in, says to the reception, "Oh, who's the old man?" She goes, "Oh, that's the young man that's waiting for the real estate prices to drop down." So look, the thing that's really interesting about this, which has actually caught a lot of people off guard, is a lot of really good, solid market forecasters were predicting far more significant price downturn for Sydney. Now, it may still happen, right? This is all prediction crystal ball stuff. But by this stage, a lot of people were thinking that Sydney would be off 20%. Not many people have suggested that we'd be seeing price growth February, March, April, considering at that point when the market started to turn a little bit positive, we were in the midst of 10 consecutive cash rate increases. So it's definitely caught most people on the hop.
And how long does it take for that housing shortage to turn into, I guess, price pressure and price increase?
Well, that's been the critical thing. This cycle is the one thing that nobody predicted, and this is where it's very difficult, and I guess predicting the future when you're talking to market forecasters, is they were just assessing, putting into their algorithms, interest rates go up by X, that means that borrowing capacity drops by Y, therefore buyers aren't going to be able to borrow enough, so that will just come straight off the pricing. What they haven't been able to factor in is what's the human response to a market downturn? What's a human reaction when prices go up? Well, the human reaction is people have just circled their wagons and done nothing, so they're not offloading their properties. So the only people that are selling are doing so for a very legitimate reason. So there's none of this speculative type of selling and trading and let's get in and out of the property market, which you can do in a buoyant market. with some security about offloading your house. But now most people, so whilst interest rates and quickly increasing interest rates has a major impact, of equal importance is supply and demand. And so what nobody could factor into any of their algorithms was that the available property was going to drop by 30, 40, even up to 50% in certain markets. And that has a massive and even bigger impact on than interest rate increases have.
Yeah. And the thing I love about macroeconomics is that retrospectively, everyone's got a formula, but that formula is great till it stops working. Then they have to adjust it.
Yeah, this is my thing with it's, this goes through. And I spoke about this last time is in the forecasting stuff. It ends up being they upgrade their forecasts on what's going to happen with the cash rate every month. So it ends up being, it's not really a forecast anymore. You're just predicting what happened after it happened. It's like now this happened, So it's just like, but nevertheless, we're suckers for it here in Australia. It's the headlines. They keep going back to the same pundits. Let's get your headline this week. What do you think is going to happen? And then that becomes our dialogue in the market. Everyone's like, oh, did you see that headline in the Herald or the Telegraph or the Financial Review? Oh, market's doing this, market's doing that. It's like, yeah, but did you see it the week before? It said something completely contradictory to that. So it's just one of those things that we have to wade our way through, as you know.
Yeah, and I guess, my view, every market's got amazing opportunities. And the worst market's probably got, if it's a buyer's market, well, you don't have to work as hard for your opportunities. But I guess the thing that I'm seeing, and I guess because we do inspections for clients, we offer a service where we go and provide planning and feasibility for property purchases. And we're seeing that it's definitely easier to find value. And we're seeing properties transacted, I guess, as you say, that where I'm going, oh, that's a great deal for the buyer,
For sure.
Yeah, there's some amazing deals to be had. I guess if prices are stable or rising, then I guess all things equal out, and you still have to work a bit, but maybe in this market, you don't have to work quite as hard to find value as with previous markets.
Yep.
I guess what's your advice to prospective buyers? I mean, should they wait? Should they jump in? Should they because I guess interest rates are still relatively low, and that's what some people forget. They think interest rates are spiked, and it's like actually it's still pretty low historically, right? So
it is, yes.
So it's on balance of probability, they will keep creeping up just because we're still pretty low. There's nothing magical about that, but is now the time to buy if people are thinking?
Yeah, look, it comes back to what you just said, right? You buy when you feel the time is right. Like if you're solving a legitimate issue that's going on within your family or personal circumstances, then whatever the market is absolutely a fine time. And, trading, as you would know, Matt, in the same market conditions, really the net effect of, whether or not you're paying a bit more, well, you're selling for a bit more. So I would prefer to be buying in a market like this when you're not turning up to an auction and there are 10 people that actually have a budget which is significantly better, or they can access more liquidity that they can then go and just blow you out of the water. So this is an environment now where so financing is a lot tougher. So whilst interest rates are quite low now, I think you're looking at like a 5.75%, 6% mortgage rate. You're also being assessed by 3% on the APRA serviceability rate as well. So that kind of puts you at 9%. And when you're talking about the growth that we had, on a $2.5-3 million house, being assessed at 9%, it's a pretty big assessment rate. So that's certainly knocked a lot of confidence out of people. But also when you turn up to an auction, it means that people kind of have hard budgets. It's like, well, look, that's our max level, so we're out. As opposed to when, during COVID, if you had to tap into an extra 100, 200K, the banks would be like, no worries. When the interest rates, the cash rate was sitting at 0.1%, so I would think that this time in the market is actually pretty good. It feels as though, I suspect we'll get another interest rate rise in May. The RBA's latest statement suggests that, it was a line ball decision in April, whether or not they pause or otherwise. Inflation, as you know, is still, kind of running rampant. It's well outside of the target band of 2-3%, which is what the RBA want it to be within. And we're still, traveling at, 7.5-8%. And in unemployment, it's 50-year record low. So I think there's enough confidence there for the RBA to lift again at least. But it does feel like we're almost at the end of that cycle, at least for the moment. So I would suspect from a buyer's perspective, once they know that, hey, look, that is it, we're finally done, people will return to the market and sentiment will shift quite positive quite quickly. It's already doing that to a degree from the April announcement of just pausing and the fact that there's a low supply. So I would suspect, which we always have, that we always felt that this quarter 2, quarter 3 of this year would be a good time to be buying.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you. If the time's right for you, then you should buy. But yeah, there are some very good deals out there, and houses are being bought for prices that you didn't think properties went for in those suburbs anymore, you know, like low ones in some places where you kind of thought, you know, the median was more like 2. And so you're getting some unbelievable deals, people, you know, and on the flip side, people are, you know, there's a lot of properties where potentially someone's passed away or they want to cash in or whatever, and they're coming up and they have to be sold. And so there's always a churn in properties that were always going to go to the market at that point, no matter what. But one thing overlaid with all the madness, that's madness because I don't understand it, maybe it's just part of a normal cycle. Overlaid with all of that is this chaotic development of, particularly where I've ended up in Roselle, of not only a metro line but a new road system and tunnels and a fish markets down the other end, which are like, they've, I don't know if you've seen it recently, but they've basically piled a whole section of harbour and emptied out.
Yeah.
I don't know, like what seems like 6 football fields worth of harbour to build a fish market.
Totally.
And then that's just the start of it. That's just the start of what's going to happen in White Bay. And I guess we've unwittingly, like, I found myself at the epicenter of it, but that's not the only place around that's having major infrastructure projects. And I've been wondering, like, what effect do they have when they're announced, when they're in the middle of building it, and when it's finally finished? Is there a further bounce in property in those areas when they're coming up to completion? And I guess my reference point is the fact that, one, we've got a drive through a build just to get home. We've got to drive through a building site every day, a giant building site. And two, when we've put properties on the market, it seems like the market's always quite fickle. So if it's really hot and the house feels too hot, people will only think about that house in summer. And conversely,
totally,
the minute it's cold, they'll focus on what heating is available. So is it a little bit the same with those infrastructure and the big changes that are forthcoming?
Yep. So, yeah, Matt, you absolutely hit the nail on the head. I guess the psychology of what we see in how people transact is they make decisions based on what they need today. The lack of insight, foresight, wisdom, whatever you want to call it, about what the long-term outcome that they're looking to achieve doesn't seem to play a huge factor in their thinking. And we saw that through COVID with people moving to the Southern Highlands and up the North Coast and things of that nature. Now we're seeing a lot of people going, oh, gee, the city's back alive again and we should come back. So with the infrastructure that you're speaking about, yes, everybody can see that it's going on, and there's probably in the back of their mind, oh, this will be a long-term benefit for me, that'll be good at some point. But is it any value today? No, it's not. It's annoying to me today. I've got to drive through a building site. The road keeps changing and the mapping of which way I go to get onto different bridges and things of that nature. There's a metro coming. Can we trust the government to ever deliver it? You know, there's all of that stuff which probably comes into their mind as opposed to seeing it there, done, active. And I think we touched on this before we came on here today. The Cross City Tunnel across to the eastern suburbs was one such thing. It was a white elephant when it first opened. You know, there was such hoopla about, oh, look, you're going to connect the east with the inner west and it's going to be amazing. There's going to be X amount of people traveling through it each and every day. When it first opened, no one used it. everyone just kept going through the city or finding their alternate way because they didn't want to pay the toll. But as it's gradually word of mouth, more people have got to use it and things like that, it's broken the back and it's now actually a very active thing. And we've seen a huge influx of people from that particular market move across to the inner west and actually do it on the basis of, actually, these areas are really closely connected now. So I do think the longer term outcome that's happening around the inner west is going to be of significant advantage as things and projects do get completed. There's no question what's going to happen here over the next decade or so is pretty extraordinary. But until it's done, basically people just look at it and just go, for now, it's annoying.
Yeah. And my favorite thing about the West Connects is that for a time, a temporary slipway was re-diverted. And for a time, Uber drivers wanted to drive via Lilyfield from Rozelle to get to the city. So we're completely lost. The algorithm didn't work out that the road was diverted. It just showed it as closed. All sorts of crazy things have been happening with 1 minute, you know, you're in the right lane to turn in. Next minute, you've got to be in the far left to get anywhere near it. So,
yeah, that's right.
But look, I was driving past today and there's trees going in, which is a good sign. So it looks like, you know, they're still jackhammering bits and doing, but there's something I think someone's insisted that they put some trees in just to make it look like it's almost being finished.
Get people excited. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited. I'm excited about like just riding my bike from like Balmain to Annandale and not getting lost in a maze of temporary sort of pedestrian ways and temporary bike lanes all very much first world problems, I must say. But we just kind of lucked out by being right in the thick of it, which wasn't right on the border of where we were interested in looking, but we're kind of going, there's a lot happening here. Yeah,
there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, and there's a lot still to come from the looks of it. So in terms of the future, where are we?
Yep.
What's your best prediction for like 12 months, 6 months or 12 months from now? We're going to get you back, by the way, in 12 months.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to find what you've predicted and see how.
All right. Well, here's my crystal ball shot at crystal ball stuff. So, look, I'll give you the experience that we're having with most buyers and sellers that we're talking to, that financially they feel like they're fairly tapped. In terms of they don't have access to a heap of liquidity to go and do anything crazy. So I suspect based on, you know, buy behaviors and sellers behaviors and what's happening financially, I can't see the market firing off into the stratosphere anytime soon. I think most people would be fairly comfortable if trading conditions remained fairly stable. If there was modest growth somewhere between, you know, 0% and 5%, I think most people would think that's a fairly good outcome. And maybe that's probably what they could absorb financially. So that'd be my take on it. The unknown stuff is how big an impact this migration intake is going to have on certainly Sydney property prices, because 70% of this, you know, they're expecting within the next financial year 550,000 new migrants coming into Australia, of which 70% of those are filtering straight to Melbourne and Sydney. So that's a lot. That's a big intake. So how that unfolds, I think, could have a fairly big impact on overall property values from rental demand and everything like that. I suspect from the rental side of things, we could head towards where Brisbane is. Brisbane is sub 1% vacancy rate. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see that unfold in Sydney over the next 6 to 12 months. But it's still quite difficult to buy an investment property as well. Like, investors have another 20% kind of put on them in terms of their lending criteria. So the government, they talk about what are we going to do to loosen up and make livability and housing more available for people. They've got to do something proactive to help investors coming into the market. At the moment, what they're actually saying is they're kind of whacking investors over the knuckles, saying, you big bad investors, why do you put the rents up? So, well, it's like, well, everything's going up. The cost of living, my mortgage is going up, insurance is going up, all of these things. I've got a legislation which is largely against me now if you're leasing to a tenant. So they've actually got to do something which entices, encourage more investment. So I think that investment market's going to be pretty interesting. But yeah, I think from a sales side of things, you can get me back. I'm going to sit on the fence here and say 0% to 5% growth. I reckon that's where we'll be to close out the year.
And the fashionable sport at the moment is definitely bashing up landlords. Like, it's definitely
it's awful.
It's definitely picking on, and so I guess some rightfully so. But I mean, we've always been dodgy landlords.
There's always has been, but I'll give you an example just to say, and this is the difficult thing that we have, because we deal with a lot of landlords on a daily basis, and many of them, when you talk to them about rents are going up and should we put your rent up and everything like that, despite obviously their mortgages repayments have gone up exponentially, and a lot of people will say to us quite commonly, oh, look, don't go up by that much. We've got a good tenant. We just go up by a modest amount and keep the tenant happy. So that's generally, I would say, about 70% of our conversation with landlords that have the financial capacity not to kind of push the boundary too much. But the other thing as well is that we get concerned about is you can go and buy $1 million worth of shares that you pay less stamp duty, it's liquid, it's most of that money can sit offshore. You don't employ the tradie. You don't employ the plumbers and the insurance and the fire services and all of these people that work and keep these communities surviving and moving. You don't do any of that stuff. You don't actually put a roof over anybody's head. Yet as an investor, you pay much more stamp duty. You pay huge insurance. Land tax has gone up by 15%. It's ridiculous. The land tax that we're seeing now around our area is well over where the land value would probably be sitting. So you've got all these increasing costs. And it's just making it unpalatable. Like, and then you look at the yield that a lot of these people are looking at, and it's 2%. And then the government are talking about capping rent and abolishing negative gearing. If negative gearing doesn't exist, you'll see these investors will all just leave the market and go and buy shares. It's just easier. So I think that's something that the government, whoever's advising them, is just giving them the big bad, story of the bad landlords, which probably represent 10% of the market. The rest of them are hardworking Aussies that have just done the best they can to get one investment property. That's generally the people that we deal with.
Yeah, and I guess you talked before about migration and that putting pressure on housing, but we're still feeling like in terms of construction, there's still a lack of people to get, so as much as there's less, and that may turn, but for the moment, we've really felt it in the last year, just trying to get a bricklayer, just trying to get someone to do something. And one of the things that I've realized is that we're not bringing in tradesmen at all. We're bringing in, we do invite some tradesmen from English-speaking countries, but what I found is that a lot of tradesmen from non-English speaking countries have got no chance of passing the English test. So we're getting lots of good, bright people who can pass an English exam, but we're still so short of tradesmen. I found in the last year, we're competing with Uber for tradesmen because they go off and drive Uber or deliver food or do, and they don't really think of that as work in the same way as being a laborer on site, moving bricks around or laying bricks. That's work. Driving around Sydney, it's a novelty, particularly for newly arrived migrants or working visas people. So, yeah, it's funny because finally they're coming and now they've got nowhere to live.
Welcome to Australia. Yeah. I hear you. Yeah. And look, we're hearing that everywhere with, as you say, with the tradies. And that's what's, in terms of opportunities, but finding homes now which require a bit of work are actually, and you would know, Matt, where the days were, wasn't that long ago, where a renovated home versus an unrenovated home, so apples for apples, same land area, similar street, that type of thing, they were going for not that much differential. People would look at it and go, it's almost as though people preferred homes which weren't renovated. And it was all the flavour of the month. Oh, buy a home, blank canvas, do what you can, create your inspiration, do whatever you might want to do. Those days have flipped considerably, whereas people now know, no, I want to get something which is, I don't mind doing a kitchen, but I don't want to redo the back and do all of these things. So you talk about a market that, and the impact of not having trades around is that's definitely having an impact about how people are making their buying decisions because they're certainly stepping away pretty heavily from properties which require a lot of work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess we found that as well. We're doing, in terms of planning and things that are in our pipeline, lots of things that have minimal work and refurbs, whereas, like I said before, a lot of our pipeline of work a year or two ago was people just desperate for more space, more study space, yeah, more living space, more trying to get another living zone so that they don't have to, they can move the kids to the other end of the house sometimes.
I know that feeling.
So it's kind of flipped a little bit, where it is more, we're doing more and more of smaller refurbs, I think, in our zone anyway. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Yep. You know, but and I should sort of say that we're a very small data set. we're a blip.
Yeah, but you got your finger on the pulse. You got your finger on the pulse. You're out there. You talk to a lot of people.
But hardly, you know, economic data to be relied upon. Matt, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
It's great to have you. We're trying to build on this podcast, and I think you've certainly been one of the most listened to earlier guests, so we thought we'd get you back. But to wrap up, what are the three takeaways for today? Yeah. I'll let you start, and if you get stuck, I'll chime in.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think a key takeaway for your listeners at the moment is don't rely on what you're reading in the media to make your decision on trying to pick the market. Oh, look, the media says it's going to do this. They keep getting it wrong. They consistently get it wrong. They're going to keep getting it wrong. So I think you've got to look and get out into the market and feel the sentiment, feel the vibe, and then go, is this the right time for me to make a move? And if it is, do so. I think if you've got to get your finance in place now, because the hurdles to do that are quite tricky. So we're hearing a lot of that, and you might find or be quite surprised if you haven't gone through the financing process, just how tight lending may very well be, and how you might, you know, you may have been able to borrow $1 million previously. That might be down to $700,000 now. So I think that's a key takeaway for me. So if you are coming into the market to do that, and I think really my third one for me at least is think long term. You know, like, why are you moving? Is it for something that you need because you need it today, or what's your long term outcome that you're looking to achieve from that, and make sure that you make that decision wisely. That's something that's going to satisfy you over the next 5 years at least, because, you know, with the costs of moving, it just eats away at you. So you want to be somewhere for at least 5 years just to make your money and get out of the asset when you do, with a decent win.
And I'm going to chime in and say, be kind to landlords. And I'm not a landlord, by the way, just for disclosure. I'm actually not.
Yeah.
Lucky to have a house. There's a lot of crap flying around about, nothing's changed about landlords. It's just the flavor of the month is to beat up your landlord. And I mean, so many landlords have kept rents and helped their tenants out. But just be kind to everyone, really. But
so like Kamal.
Don't be nasty to landlords. Landlords are people too. And that, you know, some of them are under pressure, you know.
Most people are.
Yeah. Yep. So all good. Thanks again. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Buildopedia. Please remember to like us and share our episode with your friends. We'd love your comments and suggestions. And we have a new website, buildopedia.au, where you can get in touch or leave a question and check out our blog.